about the topic of Amunah. Because that's life. It's the first thing Hashem ever said to us at our Sinai, and it's the most basic question I ask myself when I wake up in the morning. Do I believe in Hashem? And if I do, what are the ramifications for my day and for my life? And we all believe in Hashem. I believe that every Jew is programmed to believe in Hashem. But Amunah has very many layers to it. There's a lot of layers to Amunah. And I want to learn together something very simple, but very difficult, as you'll see. It's not a hard shir. You see the marmakomos are not particularly long or fancy. Just one page from a sefer. I want to begin, before we get into that, I want to begin by sharing three different quotes from three different books. Three comments, each one related to Rav Yechezkel Levinstein. Rav Yechezkel Levinstein, the great mashkiach from Mir, from Panovich. Okay, listen to these three quotes from three different books. The first one comes from a book called B'michitzasam, an English translation, In Their Shadows. It was written by a Rav who had connections to many different Rabbanim. In the second volume, he describes, in the words of Rav Yechezkel, what it was like the first time he heard, who was the then Mashkiach of Mir, Rav Yerucham Levavitz, give a Musar Shmuz. And how he felt after hearing that one Shmuz. Listen to this. After hearing our teacher's first discourse on faith, you don't have this on the page in front of you, is Rav Yechezkel Levinstein speaking about, again, hearing Rav Yerucham from Mir, the great Mashkiach of Yerucham Levavitz. After hearing our teacher's first discourse on faith, I felt that my faith was not faith, that my tefillin were not tefillin, that my tzitzis were not really tzitzis. And from that moment on, I devoted my entire life to acquiring genuine emunah. He said, I heard my Rebbe speak once about emunah, and I realized what I thought I knew about emunah wasn't really emunah. And the ramifications for everything else followed suit. That my tefillin weren't really tefillin, my tzitzis weren't really tzitzis, and dot, dot, dot. My Shabbos wasn't really Shabbos, and my kashrus wasn't really kashrus. I can assure you that Rav Yechezkel at that point in his life had very good tefillin and very nice tzitzis, and he was Shomer Shabbos. Right? But he understood, when he heard the way Rav Yerucham spoke about emunah, he realized what he understood to what it means to have emunah, he was missing something. And that, again, had ramifications for all aspects of his Yiddishkeit. Okay? Another quote from a different book, from a book called Warm by Their Fire. And there's a section in there that talks about Rav Yechezkel Levinstein. And one of the students of Rav Yechezkel, a fellow by the name of Rav Binyamin Zeilberger, who was interviewed, said the following about his Rebbe. He said that when the Ponovich Rosh Yeshiva, Rav Shach Zatzal, was maspid my Rebbe, referring to Rav Yechezkel, he said, there are those who have emunah in their minds. It's Rav Shach talking about Rav Yechezkel after he had passed away in his eulogy. He said about Rav Yechezkel, there are those who have emunah in their minds, and there are those who have emunah in their hearts. Rav Yechezkel, however, had emunah in his hands. It was that tangible. Rav Yechezkel had emunah in his hands. The title of today's shir was Emunah Lemaisa, the emunah of the mind, of the heart, and of the hands. What did this Rav Binyamin mean when he said about his Rebbe, or really what Rav Shach said about in eulogizing his Rebbe Rav Yechezkel? Right? What did he mean? Some people have emunah in their mind. Some people are zochet to have emunah in their hearts. Rav Yechezkel had emunah in his hands. It was that real. It was that tangible. It's a second comment about the emunah of Rav Yechezkel Levinstein. Okay? And the third one, and this comes from the Art Scroll biography by the name Rav Yechezkel, about Rav Yechezkel Levinstein. The Talmidim would tell one another during the week of Parshas Vayigash, everyone should get his visa ready. Where were they traveling to? Because the Mashkiach will be going into Mitzrayim. Mashkiach will be going into Mitzrayim. Rav Yechezkel so lived with the Parshios, it was so real for him, as Klal Yisrael are transitioning to Mitzrayim, so the Bachrim used to joke, oh, the Mashkiach's getting ready for his big trip, we better make sure our visas and our passports are up to date. Rav Shlomo Volbe even stated that Rav Yechezkel was the last of the Yidden to leave Mitzrayim. He was the last one who left Mitzrayim. I mean, Rav Yechezkel was the last Jew to leave Mitzrayim. Rav Yechezkel lived in our times, or, you know, relatively. Within our century, Rav Volbe said Rav Yechezkel was the last of the Yidden to leave Mitzrayim, last of the great personalities for whom the miracles of Yetzias Mitzrayim were tangible, sensory reality. Okay, so three quotes about Rav Yechezkel Levinstein. Three things about the Emunah of Rechatzkel. Rechatzkel first commenting as a young bachur listening to Rav Yeruchim from Mir, give a drasha. And Rechatzkel said that one drasha overturned my whole world. That I realized my Emunah wasn't Emunah, and by extension, my tefillin weren't tefillin, my tzitzis weren't tzitzis, my Yiddishkeit wasn't Yiddishkeit. That was number one. The second one, Harashach said that some people have Emunah in their minds, some people have it in their hearts, some people have it in their hands, and Rechatzkel had Emunah in his hands. It was tangible, it was real. And then lastly, with the students, again reflecting now with Rav Chatzkel as their Rebbe, when he became the Mashgiach, saying about their Rebbe, our Rebbe knew what it meant to go to Mitzrayim, to leave Mitzrayim. He lived the Torah in such a real way. The Rav Shlomo Volbi said, our Rebbe was the last Jew to have a sensory experience of Chayav Alim Liros as Atzmo, Ki'ilu Yatzim Mitzrayim, to really understand, to be able to close his eyes and to feel it. Not just to think it, right, but to mamish feel the experience of going to Mitzrayim and emerging from Mitzrayim. Three comments about the Emunah of Rav Chatzkel Levinshtein. Now, why am I telling you this? I'm telling you this because someone asked me a question the other day. I was in shul, and a fellow came over to me, and he said, it's interesting, we use the phrase, we always talk about the phrase Emunah Shleima. Emunah Shleima, complete Emunah. Ani Mamin, Emunah Shleima, complete faith. So he said to me, I understand the concept of tshuva shleima, and I also understand the concept of tshuva that's not shleima. Right? Tshuva shleima means I've perfected all of my sins, I've corrected all of my averos. Tshuva not shleima makes sense, it's good. If I can't fix everything, so I fix some things in my life. If I can do 10% tshuva, that's also, that's good, we get that. Yes, we strive for tshuva shleima. But if I can make my life 50% better, so then kol hakavod, that's great. Refuah Shleima. We wish a person who's not well that they should be zochet to have what? A Refuah Shleima. So again, I understand why we want Refuah Shleima. I also understand why a chola who's in terrible pain, I would be also happy if they were in less terrible pain. I understand the concept of Refuah that's not Shleima, and that's purposeful. It's very good. So this fellow said to me, but I don't really get this Indian called Emunah Shleima. Is there an Emunah that's not Shleima? Can I really claim that I believe if I don't really believe? I mean, Emunah, either kind of you're in or you're out. Either Emunah, I have Emunah, I believe it, or I don't believe it. If it's Chatzi Chatzi, then I don't really believe it. What's this Indian? And again, in the way the Ani Mamim's lists are printed in our Arsul Siddur, the 13 principles of faith based on the Rambam, Ani Mamim B'Emunah Shleima. We have the chutzpah to declare, I believe with perfect faith. Really, perfect faith. There's a tzaddik used to say it, I want to believe with perfect faith. On the be'ina, I want to have perfect faith. It's hard. Perfect faith, what is perfect faith? And is that mashma, does that imply that there's something called, not perfect faith? Emunah not shleima. Is that a real thing? Can that be considered a real thing? So I want to learn together a piece from the Stipler Gaon. And that's the page you have in front of you. I hope there's enough to go around. The Stipler Gaon, Rav Yisrael Yaakov Kanievsky, the father of Rav Chaim Kanievsky, Shlito, today. The Stipler passed away in 1985. He was called the Stipler because he was born in a place in Ukraine called Hornstipel. So he was known as the Stipler Gaon. A tremendous genius of Torah, a person who came to Eretz Yisrael in the 1930s, was related by marriage to the Chazon Ish, who beat him by about a year and a half to Eretz Yisrael. Someone who had learned in the great yeshivas of Navardik, tremendous, tremendous Talmud Chacham, a tremendous Baal Eitza, a person who was sought after for his very sagely advice. And the Stipler Gaon in Parshas Noach hits this topic on the head. And this is my answer to the fellow in Shul, and this is my answer to us in trying to answer that question. Emunah Shleima, Emunah not Shleima, is there such a thing as, right, having Emunah in your mind versus in your heart versus in your hands. Chatzkel Levinshtein, needless to say, from all three examples that I gave you, from three different books, right, each one is saying that Rav Chatzkel was a person who worked on his Emunah and understood that there's a very high level of Emunah that one can attain, and he attained it. But is it kind of all or nothing when it comes to Emunah, or are there levels? Just like there are levels in many other aspects of Torah life. There's Tshuva Shleima, there's Tshuva Not Shleima, there's Refuah Shleima, there's Refuah Not Shleima. There's Emunah Shleima, and then there's also a legitimate level of faith called Emunah that's, partial Emunah. Is there really such a thing? Can there be such a thing? And I want you to listen careful to the words of the Stipler. And I want you, if you're interested, to hold on to this piece of paper and to review it once in a while. Because it's very lemaisa. The title of today's year is Amuna Lemaisa. It's very lemaisa. I'll just tell you one quick story about the stipler to give you chizik to hold on to this piece of paper. The stipler Gaon went home one time from the yeshiva in the Vardik to be with his family. And there was a fellow in his hometown who had a son who was also learning in the Vardik. So he said, "Oh, you're going to see my son soon? Good, he's coming home, hopefully in the near future. I have a letter for him. If you could deliver this letter back to my son when you go to yeshiva, sure, not a problem." So he takes the letter, and he's the shliach to deliver the letter. Well, on his way back to yeshiva, World War I broke out, and that was the end of going back to yeshiva. And the stipler Gaon, Rav Yisrael Yaakov Kanievsky, hung on to that letter for the next 8 years. It was a shliach, felt an achrayus. He held on to that letter for 8 years. He held on to that letter until finally one day, somewhere down the road, he met up with this fellow. And he says to this fellow, "You should just know, I have a letter for you." "A letter from who?" "From your father." And he sees he's tearing up. "My father's not even alive anymore." So he says, "Well, truthfully, I've been holding on to this letter for 8 years since we learned in yeshiva together. I was sent, your father expected me to deliver it in a short period of time. The war broke out. I never came back to yeshiva. But I felt it was my duty, my responsibility to hold on to the letter." So he's so excited. "A letter from my father, who's no longer alive, to hear from beyond the voice of my father once again. A father writing to his son in yeshiva. I'm sure it's filled with very meaningful words of encouragement. And how proud he is of him. He's so excited to read, to think of it almost in a certain sense, the last will and testament of his father that he was never zochet to receive from his father. Almost a baskel from beyond the world. Beyond this world," he opens it up, and he begins to read. And it's filled, and the stipler would tell this story with a very heavy heart. He used to share this story. He said it's filled with all sorts of very mundane comments and requests, culminating with the main message that he wanted to say to his son, which is, "When you come home for Shabbos in a week from now, don't forget to bring the heron." That's what it said in the letter. "My most important message to you is don't forget to bring the heron." And the stipler said, "Chaval, if only this father would have known that one day this would be the letter which he signs off to his son. This is it. This is my final message to you, my son. Don't forget to bring the heron for Shabbos. Don't forget to bring the heron." I guess they had good herring in the Vardik, I don't know. "Don't forget to bring the heron." And the stipler said, sometimes in life we have an opportunity to learn something or to convey something or to transmit something or to receive something, and we're not there. We don't get it. We don't get the message. Okay? So here's a letter from the stipler to you. It's a piece from his Sefer Birchas Peretz in Parshas Noach. But again, let's try to really internalize it as the stipler Gaon, who left this world in 1985, speaking to us from beyond and saying, 1985 was complicated, but 2018 is much more complicated. Whatever I wrote in 1985 about having a munah, it's that much more relevant today. So we begin with the pasuk in Parshas Noach. Vayavo Noach uvanov mipnei mehamabel. V'chulam mipnei mehamabel. Noach and his children entered the teva mipnei mehamabel. Noach, Bereishis chapter 7, verse 7. Perek Zayin, Pasuk Zayin. Umilashon mipnei mehamabel. From the fact that it says Noach entered the teva because of the waters of the mabel. Lamdu chazal, shelo nichnas Noach el teva, ela acher shekvar yored hamabel bepoa. Noach entered the teva because of the waters. Well, Noach, come on. You knew the mabel was coming. You should have got on your boat a little bit earlier. You should have gotten your boat a little late to be getting onto the boat once it's already mabbling outside. It was very cute. This past Shabbos, I was trying to get my son dressed and get him out of, we were on the NCSY summer Shabbaton. So I was trying to get him out of the hotel room to go downstairs. And he was just having fun, jumping on the bed. And I was like, come on, Yaakov, we got to go downstairs. You know, it was almost lunchtime. And he didn't want to get dressed. He was running around in his fireman pajamas. I was like, Yaakov, come on, we got to go. We're going to miss the boat. All of a sudden he looks at me and says, What boat? I said, No, not a boat. We're not, like, he was so excited about a boat ride, you know? That was going to get him out of the room. I said, No, not a boat. Like, daddy's trying to say, like, you know, we got to go. He's got to go somewhere. Yeah? So, Noach, you're going to miss the boat. Right? We understand what that expression means, I think. Yeah? So, Noach, you're waiting for the mabel, the poel. You didn't get on the boat until what? Until you're almost drowning. V'amayim dachku, Chazal say. The water pushed him in. Not literally. And then literally thrown onto the boat with the water. But it was only when he saw the water that he says, you know what, it's probably time to get on this boat. Uvemejesh Rabba Amru, the Achar Shabo Hamayim the Karsulov. Only when he was up to his ankles, his knees, how deep was he? Once the water was rising up, nichnas, then he entered the boat. It wasn't when the first couple of drops on his head. It was mamish, the water was building up. And he was waiting. And this is all quoted by Rashi, by the way. Rashi says, Noach didn't get on the boat early enough. Now I ask you, let's just do a little review of world history, okay? Not taking into consideration, you know, all of the Gerald Schroeder stuff. We'll leave that for Gerald Schroeder. Okay? But just being Pashut Jews that were holding in the year Tafshin Ayin Ches from creation, you know, you can read all the books from Rav Schwab and Lubavitcher Rebbe to work out the age of the universe. Okay, that's not our topic today. Yeah? The world was created in year zero, and Hashem made the world. Okay? When was Noach born? From creation, counting from zero. When was Noach born? Noach was born in the year 1056 from creation. Noach is 500 years old, 1556, he has kids. When does the Mabel take place? Pasuk in the Chumash. Noach is 600 years old when the Mabel takes place. Bereishis Perek Zayin, Pasuk Vav. Okay, so in 1656 was the Mabel. Now, I want to just point out, we always talk about Noach building the Teva. I myself always talk about Noach building the Teva for 120 years. That's not so pasha that that's true, that he actually spent 120 years building the Teva. We know from the end of Bereishis that Hashem says 120 years from now, Ad Khan, which Rashi understands, that Hashem is issuing a warning that in 120 years from now, when Hashem gives that declaration, I'm going to bring a Mabel. I can't handle people more than 120 more years. Lav Dafka, that Noach was building the Teva for those 120 years, and he figured out when he had his kids, it comes out anywhere between, let's say, again, according to a simple calculation, somewhere between 55 and 75 years. Let's assume Noach built the Teva for 75 years, okay? Again, you can maybe argue 120, but let's assume some of these calculations are correct. So Noach built the Teva for 75 years. You want to take the smallest amount of time, so Noach built the Teva for 55 years, let's say. Be'erach. So for 55 years, this guy is outside, this guy. Who is this guy? Let's read who this guy is. It's Chata'ayni Maskiryam to call him a guy. Who is this guy? This guy who's called by God himself, Ish, Tzadik, Tamim. Right? He's not a guy. Noach's a Tzadik. Noach is a tamim, a wholesome, complete person. That's Hashem's description of Noach. So what's going on? If they're building the Teva and giving Musar Shmuzin for so many years, telling people, do tshuva, days are coming. He didn't get onto the Teva until he was almost thrown onto it. He was forced onto it. Says Rashi in the fourth line, Rashi brings Chazal, Sha'af Noach miktane amunahay. Noach was also a person of little faith. Really? Really, Noach didn't believe. He stood there for 55 years, at least, building a... Okay, he lived a lot longer than we lived. So 55 years maybe doesn't seem so long to you. But for 55 years, lefachos, maybe 75 years, maybe 120 years, he certainly knew about it. He's preparing for this Mabel. And Rashi says, Noach didn't have faith. Or he had little faith. He didn't have emunah shleima. Mamin ve'eno mamin shiyavo a Mabel. He believed, but he didn't really believe that the Mabel was coming. Really? He's building the Teva. He's trying to makarif people. His whole life is revolving around this boat, but he doesn't actually believe that it's going to happen. God spoke to the world. He knew it was going to happen. What does that mean he didn't believe? Achidachku amayin, the water has to push him in? Says the stipler going in the fifth line, sixth line, ulechorah kamo zar nechsha. What a strange thing. What a strange chazal. What a strange Rashi. That Noach gets forced into the Teva. To say about Noach, to say such a thing, Shreya Torah he'ida alav shu ish tzadik tamim, the perfect, wholesome tzadik Noach, the leader of his generation, Kadosh Baruch Hu declares, I'm going to destroy all flesh. 120 years, he's at least thinking about it, building the boat. Says the stipe in the last line of the first paragraph, Heichi yitochin, how is it possible? Lomer alav shahayim miktani amuna shevo amab. How can you say about such a person? He doesn't actually believe the Mabel is going to come. His whole life was preparing for the Mabel. You hear the question? It's a good question. Now it's a hard Rashi. Noach didn't believe. There's Chassidus of, you know, Pshatim in this Rashi, where it says that no, Mamin ve'eno Mamin means, of course, Mamin, he believed. Of course he believed. But Eno Mamin, he didn't want to believe that Hashem was actually going to destroy the world. He believed in Hashem 100%. But he also wanted to believe that people are going to change. He wanted to believe that people are going to do tshuva. Until the last minute, Noach was begging them to change their ways and stop the Mabel. He was a tzaddik. He believed in people. Maybe. Okay, you can look in this farm, the Oiv Yisrael, the Apterav, tzaddikim talk about that approach to this Rashi. But the Pashup Shad and Rashi is that no, Noach himself was Ketanei Amunah, he believed and didn't believe. What is that? What is believed and not believed at the same time? I asked you before, what is Amunah Shleima? And there's something called not Amunah Shleima. So says Rashi in Parshas Noach, yes, there's something called Mamin Ve'eno Mamin. What is that? What kind of level is that? How do we understand that concept of Mamin Ve'eno Mamin? So says the Stipler Gaon, and he's gonna define it for us very clearly. And again, just like any other aspect of being a person or being a Jew, or being a growing Jew, there are many levels. Yes, there's something called simple emuna. There's something called more advanced emuna. There's something called imperfect emuna. There's something called perfect emuna. Complete emuna, half emuna. Mamin ve'eno mamin. Says the Stipler going in the second paragraph. In Noach's head, Noach was 100% sure there's going to be something called a Mabel. Skip the brackets, go to the third line. Now here's the key line. That's it. We could probably stop here and just work on this, you know. Have a little meditation session. Everyone can just think about this for the next 25 minutes. And try to connect the two most distant parts of our body, which is our brain and our heart. As many tzaddikim would say. The biggest distance in the world is to get what you know to be true here, v'yadata yom, ashevosa el vavecha. To be able to actually feel what I know intellectually to be true. Says the Stipler Gaon, of course, in Noach's mind, Noach had spent 120 years thinking about it, learning about it, lecturing about it, even building the boat. And yet, loba karachushis, but it's very hard to picture it till it happens. Let me ask you, Mashiach. You believe in Mashiach? I would bet that if I asked you one by one, right, everyone here would say, yeah, I believe in Mashiach. And if you didn't, if you wanted to admit to me privately that you didn't, you'd feel uncomfortable with that because you want to believe in Mashiach. Right? So if I were to ask you again, the same question, but just with like a little more, you know, a little more honestly, maybe looking over my glasses or something serious like that, you know. But do you really believe in Mashiach? Can you picture it? Is it real to you? Picture it? You can feel it? Shlomo Volbi once came to Rav Chatzka Levenstein, and he said, one of my Talmidim is having Amunah issues. So he came to Rav Chatzka. Remember the three quotes from Rav Chatzka? He was a person who had Amunah, real Amunah. So he came to him. Shlomo Volbi was a big Mashgiach himself at that time. Ali Shur, Shlomo Volbi. He came to Rav Chatzka and he said, I have a Talmud who's struggling with his Amunah, and I want some advice. Okay? They spoke about different things. And as you know, gave him some etzah, some advice, some guidance, some things to think about, talk to the Talmud about. And as Rav Volbi turned to leave, all of a sudden Rav Chatzka says to him, Shlomo, calls him back. He says, do you believe in Hashem? I believe in Hashem. I believe in Hashem? We were talking about my student. That's like, oh, I'm asking for a friend, you know? Make sure you are. Rav Volbi was asking for a student. Rav Volbi believes in Hashem. He says, Shlomo, do you believe in Hashem? Rebbe, of course I believe in Hashem. You really believe in Hashem? Yeah, I really believe in Hashem. Like, what kind of strange question is, yes, I really believe in Hashem. So Rav Chatzka said to him, so good, so go tell it to your student. And he dismissed him. Rav Volbi said, like, at first I didn't know, like, what did my Rebbe want? What was Rav Chatzka saying to me? I didn't understand what he was saying. He said, but as time moved forward, he said, I understood what he was saying. My Rebbe was saying, if you really believe it, if you have it in your hands, the way the Rav Shach eulogized Rav Chatzka, so give it to the next person. But if it's still trapped somewhere between your head and your heart and your outer limbs, then maybe you don't really have it. That's what he was saying to him. Do you really have it? You believe Mashiach. Do you really believe Mashiach? You can feel it. You can feel it internally. You can feel it. I ask you again. You believe that the Jews left Egypt? Do you believe that the Jews crossed the Yam Suf? Vada, of course. I'm an Orthodox Jewish person. Of course I believe that. Right? I believe that. I really believe that. Gadi Palik Sagada helps me to believe it. I can look at the picture with the whale in the background, you know? It makes it even easier to believe it. I believe it. Of course I believe it. Right? So then I ask you the exact same question. You really believe it? You really believe it? You can close your eyes. You can picture it. You could be there. One more story from Rav Chatzka. Rav Chatzka Levenstein one time, one of the students was sitting in the base medrash. He hears a noise coming from, I think, upstairs. Maybe Rav Chatzka had like a study upstairs, an office, I don't know. and he hears some noise, and he goes upstairs to see what's going on, and he walks in on Rav Chatzkel. Maybe a classroom, maybe it was an office, maybe it was a classroom. And he sees Rav Chatzkel with two rows of chairs. He had set up these two rows of chairs, and he's going with his eyes closed back and forth through these rows of chairs, singing back and forth through the rows of chairs. And this student, Shlomo Brevza, I think, told the story, is watching this strange scene. Finally, Rav Chatzkel hears, you know, someone in the room. He opens his eyes. He says, "Oh!" He said, "I'm so sorry." He said, "Hey, what were you doing?" He said, "Oh, I was just picturing Kriyas Yamsuf. I was just reliving Kriyas Yamsuf. I was just reliving Kriyas Yamsuf." It was real to him. He was sitting in the Beis Medrash one time. Someone was talking to him about something, and he felt that something was like a little off in his hashkafa. So Rav Chatzkel said, "Just give me a minute." He put his head down on the table. He said, "Yitzias Mitzrayim, Yitzias Mitzrayim, Yitzias Mitzrayim." And he said, "Okay, let's go back. What were we talking? Let's get back to our conversation." He could put himself in that place. It wasn't theoretical. It was real for him. It wasn't mamin ve'ino mamin. So says again, Lefi Madregaso. Obviously, Rav Chatzkel lived a lot later than Noach, and it wasn't said about Rav Chatzkel Levenstein in the Torah by HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ish Tzadik Tamim, but Noach on his Madrega only understood the Ma'abal, again in the words of the Stipler, Bakar Sichlis Velo Bakar Chushis. That Noach understood it as an idea, but he couldn't bring it home to such a degree that he didn't actually get on the boat until he was up to his ankles in the water. He couldn't awaken the feeling. It was too hard to imagine that it could be true. Maybe for holy reasons, like I told you, the Chassidus Shesvarim say. But it was hard for him to bring that idea, lemaisa, to bring it down. Again, the biggest distance in the world is the distance between the head and the heart. One time someone came to the Kotzker Rebbe. They said to the Kotzker, they said, it was a family member, someone of the family came, and they said, "Someone stole a knife, you know, maybe the... we had some help around the house. Someone stole a knife." So Kotzker Rebbe said, "Someone stole a knife? It's not possible." They said, "Why is it not possible?" He said, "Because it says in the Torah, lo signov." "Yeah? It's not possible?" The Kotzker Rebbe understood that if the Torah says something, that's a metzias, it's a fact. It's not a suggestion, it's not an idea. Lo signov. You can't steal. It's not possible to steal. Right? Not that it's wrong to steal, you shouldn't steal. You can't steal. How can you claim that someone actually did that? It's not physically possible to do such a thing. Rav Simcha Buna of Preshiska used to say, if the Torah says you can't do something, it should be as impossible for us to do as putting our hand into the fire. Putting your hand into the fire. Is that a hakara sichlis or a hakara chushis? Hakara chushis, right? If I offered you $100, I light a fire right here. Yeah? L'chavad r'bishum b'yochai, make a madura. For r'bishum b'yochai, and I say, "Okay, I want you just for 10 seconds, put your hand into the fire. Give you $100. Can't do it. Okay, I'll give you $500. Still can't do it. Give you $1,000. You can't do it. Why can't you do it? Your mind says, "I could really use $1,000. Your body says, your chushim, your senses say, "I can't do it. I just can't, I physically can't bring myself to do that thing. I don't have an override button to say I can do that. It's just not possible to do that. Because it's too clear to me, the pain that I'm going to feel by putting my hand into my arms, my arm into a fire, even for 10 seconds. I cannot do it." So Simcha Buna Preshiska said, when the Torah says you can't do certain things, it should be, "I cannot do it." I'll give you another example from the Torah. In Parshas Re'eh. In Parshas Re'eh, when it talks about Maaser Sheni, to bring in 4 years out of the 7 year Shemitah cycle, you bring 10% of your crops to Yerushalayim, your Kodesh, to be eaten. Not given to the Kohen, eaten by you. Eaten by you. Years 1, 2, 4, and 5 of the 7 year Shemitah cycle, you take some of your own produce, you bring it to Yerushalayim. Okay? You know what the Torah writes in Parshas Re'eh? Lo tuchal, lo suchal, you're not able, lechol b'sharecha. You're not able to eat it in your gates, which means you can't eat it in your hometown. You've got to bring it to Jerusalem. So I'll ask you, why can't I eat it in my gates? What's going to happen if I eat it at home? I'm going to get struck down by lightning? Is God going to scream at me out of the heavens? What's stopping me? Lo tuchal, you're not able to. Not able to? Not supposed to. The Torah says that you're not supposed to eat Maaser Sheni at home. You're supposed to take it to Yerushalayim. No, that's not what it says. Lo sucha le'achol b'sharecha. You're not able to eat it at home. What is the Torah conveying with that lo sucha? Rav Elia Meir Bloch, one of the Sheshiva from Tel, said exactly this point. Lo suchal, you're not able. You're not able. A Jew needs to train himself or herself to be able to say, if the Torah says I'm not allowed to, then I'm not able. It's not an option. For many of us, we have things like that in our life, even with regard, I'm not talking about the Simcha Bunim hand in the fire example. There's aspects of Torah that I would never do, things I just can't do. I can't turn on a light on Shabbos. You grant me $1 million check, I can't do that. I really believe that I cannot do that for all the money in the world. I have such a deep understanding of Shabbos? No, but I can't. It's not negotiable. On any level, it's not negotiable. I can't do that. There's other averos that I still rationalize. I still negotiate. I could do that. I could see myself doing that. I still do that. I shouldn't do it. It's not right to do it. But I do it. Lamaisa, I do it. Because I'm not on that level where the Torah has created a factual reality. When the Torah says you can't do something, it shouldn't register. You can't speak Lashon Hara. Not it's wrong to speak Lashon Hara. I can't. The words don't come out. It's not possible for me to do such a thing. I'll give you one more example. Ritzadok HaKohen of Lublin has a sefer called Dover Tzedek. And he brings a very interesting example, very powerful example, an area that people struggle with, sometimes. He says, if you look in the Gemara, Mesechta Sota on Daf Yud Aleph, the Gemara says that Paro, when he was trying to convince the Mialdos to kill the Jewish babies, he was also trying in a very inappropriate way to seduce the Mialdos for himself. The Gemara says that Paro, in addition again to trying to pressure them to commit murder, he was also trying to entice them to get involved with Arayos, with sexually immoral activity with him. And the Lashon of the Gemara in Sota is that it says that Paro tovon l'davar avera, that he solicited them for an avera, and avera means something in the realm of arayos, tovon l'davar avera v'lo nitbu. So how do we translate it? If you look in Arts of Gemara, you'll see what the translation is. He solicited them for illicit activity, right? V'lo nitbu, and they refused his proposition. Ritzadok HaKohen of Lublin says that's not what it says. The words mean nitvan ledvar avera. He propositioned them velo nitbu, and they weren't propositioned. Doesn't say velo ratu. They didn't give in. Doesn't say they didn't give in. That's not what it says. It says he offered to do something usser, and they said we don't even hear what you're saying. Lo nitbu. It doesn't register. Lo nitbu. We don't even know what you're talking about. That's not something we can even process. That's a level of commitment to Torah and mitzvahs. Where I don't have to fight the Yetzer Hara on it, because it's just a davar pashut to me that as a Jew who believes in a Kadosh Baruch Hu, there are things I do, things I can do, and things I cannot do, not I shouldn't do, things I cannot do. That's the difference between hakara sichlis, an intellectual understanding of something, and hakara chushis, where it's able to again to enter into my senses, that I feel it in my bones. There's things I can't do, I cannot do. So says the disciple, I'll give you another example. The bottom paragraph on page 1. Do one more example. I'll say it outside. He says that when Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's students, the Gemara in Brachos and Daf Chavches, came to visit him, and he's lying in his deathbed, and Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's students say, Rabbi, give us some advice. You're not going to be here forever. Give us some hadracha, give us some guidance. We're going our separate ways. You're going on to the next world. So he says to them, okay, you want a bracha? I'll give you a bracha. Yehi Ratzon, I give you a bracha. Shehei Mora Shemayim Aleichem Kemora Baser Vadam. You should fear God like you fear the IRS. Like you fear the cop when you see his lights go on behind you on the highway. That's how much you should fear God. So they say, Rebbe, Ad Kan, that's it? That's the whole thing? That's it? That I should fear Hashem as much as I fear a person of flesh and blood? And Rabbi Yochanan says back to them, Halavai. Halavai. Teidu, you should just know that when a person does an avera, a person's doing something illegal, he looks around to make sure that what? That people aren't watching. But you don't seem so bothered by the fact that what? That Hashem is watching. So yes, halavai, your fear of God should be like the fear of flesh and blood. And the disciple goes on and he explains, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai himself, a couple lines earlier in the Gemara, described how scared he was to die, because when a person dies and you face God, it's not like facing a person of flesh and blood. A judge of flesh and blood, I could talk my way out of it, I could slip him a bribe, the punishment is not forever. My final judgment before Hashem, I can't trick Hashem, I can't bribe Hashem, and we're talking about eternity here. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai had a pretty serious sense of the full scope of what it means to fear God. God is not flesh and blood. And yet he says to his Talmidim, I give you a bracha that you should fear Hashem, though you fear flesh and blood. And they said, Rebbe, that's all you think of us? He said, halavai. What's the pshat? Stipler explains, because again, he's telling them, it's very nice for you to think, you have all sorts of lofty ideas, Yerushamayim, these big dreams of what it means to be afraid of Hashem. If you could bring yourself to the level where you're afraid of Hashem, the way you're afraid of flesh and blood, that's a very high madrega. Let's not kid ourselves. When the cop's lights go on behind you, your heart starts to flutter a little bit faster on the highway. I'm getting pulled over. I'm in big trouble. And you're not in such big trouble. A couple points on your license, maybe. A couple $100. Right? Most people don't go to jail for a speeding ticket. Unless you're really speeding. Yeah? It's not the end of the world. Does your heart race like that when you daven Shmoneh Esrei in the morning as you're negotiating your day and your life with Hashem? No. So halavai, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is very real, very very honest, very realistic. Halavai, you should fear Hashem the way you fear flesh and blood. When my wife and I first got married, we were living in the apartments in Teaneck. And at one point we had a little mouse that was on the loose in our apartment. And I remember one time sitting at the dining room table, late at night, it was quiet, my wife was sleeping already. I was working on some shiurim for that week, and all of a sudden I saw it run by, right? And I jumped. You can say I'm a wimp, it's true, maybe true. Right? But I was very scared. I got very frightened. And I remember reading in a sefer that when a person has fear of something in the physical world, it's good to try to channel it towards Hashem. Meaning, I can't get my heart to race like that for God. When the mouse runs by, and you get startled, you get scared, and now you're in a moment of fear, so try to like bring Hashem into that moment. Sounds like a cheap way to get Yiras Shamayim, right? But, it's something. So that's what Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is saying to his students, right? Halavai, you should be able to take something that you're scared of in this world and transfer that over into the realm of your Avodas Hashem. Halavai. That's a Madrega. What the stipler is developing here again is, yes, there's something called Emunah Shleima, there's something called Yerushamayim, there's the whole thing, right? But there's often a disconnect, and if we go for the whole thing, sometimes we think we have the whole thing, but it's only a theoretical whole thing. We don't actually have it. We don't actually believe it. Chassam Sofer one time was mechabed someone with benching. I want you to lead the benching. So he said, I want you to lead the benching. And he says to him, you know what Chazal say about benching? Kos Shal Bracha. So the fellow says, no, I don't know what it says. So he says, Chazal say that a kos shel bracha, to be able to have a cup that was used for a mitzvah, right, under the chuppah, for benching, yeah, a kos shel bracha, benching is a mitzvah, daraisa, v'chalta v'savata v'rachta, a kos shel bracha is worth 40 gold coins. So you should just know, I'm giving you a big gift, allowing you to lead the benching. So the silly fellow at the chutzpah would say, honestly, Rabbi, I'd prefer 40 gold coins. You could use the cash. So Chassam Sofer said, no problem. And gave him the money, and he said, I'll lead the benching. Do you believe it? When Chazal say that a mitzvah is worth 40 gold coins, do you believe that? You believe it like you'll pay for it? Believe it? Or like, it would be nice if it's, Chazal are just exaggerating. Chassam Sofer said, it's no problem. I'll pay for it. It's worth it. It's actually worth 40 gold coins. It was real to him. It was something tangible. And that was the level of Emunah of Chatzkel Levenstein. That at the end of his life, again, other tzaddikim could say about him, he had a moon in his hands. He felt it. It was real. It was something tangible. He could touch it. We only have a couple minutes left, but I want to try, ever so slightly, to try to connect this idea, maybe, very quickly, to Lag BaOmer. Okay? Maybe what we're really trying to explain today is that there's a difference between something called Amunah and something called Bitachon. The Chazon Ish wrote a work, a small work, called Amunah Ubitachon, Ve'od. There's other topics also. Right? You get to the third section, you're like, wait a minute, this isn't about Emunah Ubitachon. Right. Because the title of the book is Emunah Ubitachon, Ve'od, and other things. The first two sections are about Emunah and Bitachon. What's the difference, according to the Chazon Ish, between Amuna and Bitachon? And it's available in English, and it's a worthwhile sefer to go through, even if you just read it in English, just to get down some of these basic ideas. The Chazon Ish explained, Amuna is the theory, faith as an idea. Bitachon is the practice, is the application of the idea. So yes, in a certain sense, when we say Ani Ma'am Emuna Shleima, you really are declaring, I believe it, in my mind I 100% believe it, and you do, and I believe you that you do. I believe that we think that we do. Bitachon is when I have to actually apply it to my life. Emuna is when I say to my friend who's going through a tough time, have Emuna. When the rug gets pulled out from under me, all of a sudden, right? Really? You really have Emuna? In other words, you have Bitachon? Do you trust? Can you trust Hashem? Not as theory, but as practice. Again, the Chazon Ish says, and I'm super oversimplifying, but the basic difference is Emuna is the theory, Bitachon is the practice. Can I practice it? Can I live it? Is it not only my mind? Does it trickle down to my heart? Is it found in my hands? Can I touch it? Is it tangible? Is it a sensory experience? Or is that left for Chatzka Levinsteins of the world who left Mitzrayim and entered Mitzrayim, who danced through Kriyas Yamsuf? I'm going to try to say something again quickly that's a little bit deep. The Arizal says that the name of Hashem that we think about on Lag BaOmer is the following name of Hashem, okay? I'm going to teach you a piece from the Arizal. It's beyond all of us, but just listen to the words, and I'll try to just give you one little thing to think about. And you can try to, on your own, you'll have to work on it, how it connects so deeply to Yishun Bar Yochai and what he was trying to give over by revealing the secrets of the Torah, to help us to see things that are a little more mysterious, to make it a little more real for us. The name of Hashem, and again, whatever this means, the name of Hashem that one should meditate upon on Lag BaOmer, maybe you've never heard this name of Hashem before, that's perfectly fine, is the following name of Hashem. Aleph, Chaf, Dalet, Tes, Mem. Okay, don't try to pronounce it. I'm not supposed to pronounce it. Aleph, and Chaf, Dalet, Tes, Mem. Now, what is that? What does that have to do with Lag BaOmer? Okay. So the way it's explained by the Arizal, these are the letters before, the letters that come before the name that we're very familiar with, Elohim. Aleph, and Lamed, and He, and Yod, and Mem. Okay? So what letter comes before Aleph? So say, what letter comes before Aleph? Nothing? Right, so the Aleph stays an Aleph. What letter comes before Lamed of Elohim? Lamed. Lamed, the letter for Lamed is Chaf. What letter comes before He? Dalet. What letter comes before Yud? Tes. What letter comes before the Mem of Elohim? So the Arizal explains, before a Mem Sofit comes a regular Mem. Okay? So really it's the three middle letters that are changing over. Of Elohim, Lamed, and He, and Yud, are becoming Chaf, and Dalet, and Tes. And the Arizal says, Chaf, Dalet, Tes is Gematria. Lag is 33, and this is the name that, if you're a Mekubal, you think about when you're in Meiron and Lag Bomber. Okay, whatever that means. I don't know. What's the Gematria of this name? The Arizal says, the gematria of this name, Aleph and Chaf and Dalet and Tesem, is 74. 74. Ad, Ayin Dalet, 74. It reminds us of a pasuk. The pasuk says, Bitchu ba Hashem, put your trust in Hashem. No, help me finish it. Ade, Ad. Trust in Hashem, Ade, Ad. To the nth degree. Bitchu ba Hashem, Bitachon, put your trust in Hashem, Ade, Ad. Trust in Hashem, all the way. Right? Ad. And this name is referred to in Sefer Chassidus v'Kabbalah as the Shem HaBitachon, the name of Bitachon. Now again, we don't have time to connect it to fully what's going on in Lag BaOmer. Right? But Lag BaOmer, I could tell you, if you read the deeper Svarim of Chassidus, again, I don't learn Kabbalah, but in Chassidus for sure, you see that Lag BaOmer is a day of Bitachon. And that's why the name of Bitachon, again, whatever that means exactly, Bitchu Hashem Ade'ad, this secretive name of Hashem, is telling us that Lag BaOmer is a day where a Jew can deepen what? Our practical faith. Not our theoretical faith. Our practical faith. How do we deepen our practical faith? How do we deepen our practical faith? By trying to live it. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai was a person, again, who wasn't only a theoretically connected to Hashem Jew. He lived it. On his deathbed, he tried to reveal it to us. He tried to let us in on a secret world that we're not really worthy of. We're not worthy of the secrets of the Torah. But he wanted us to be able to see things, to understand things deeply, to not always be caught up in a superficiality of reality, where I walk down the street, but if someone starts to, a Jewish person, you believe in the Messiah? Yeah, I believe in the Messiah. Great. You really believe in the Messiah? You really can picture Mashiach? Bitachon? It's real? You trust in it? It's like your reality? You know that cop I was talking about before? I got a speeding ticket the other week. So I pled not guilty the other night. I'm going to fight for my rights. You know what my court date is? April 18th, 2019. Got plenty of time. 2019. I have like a year to figure this out. You know how many times Mashiach's going to come between now and I'm never going to pay this ticket. I'm off the hook. Happens to be the date. I think it was April 18th. One of my students looked it up. I mentioned it in cheer the other day. He's like, Rebbe, that's Erev Pesach. Like, great. 2:30 in the Bronx at Erev Pesach. Yeah, right. Okay, I'll have to get that moved. Right? But do I really believe Mashiach's going to come and I won't have to deal with it? I have to deal with it after Mashiach comes also. It could be that's the halacha. I don't know. I have to ask Mashiach. You don't have to ask Eliyahu Hanavi. Right? But do I really believe? Do I live it? Do I feel a bitachon? Is my emunah theoretical? Or do I understand that there's a danger of being a mamin ve'eno mamin, and we're trying to make our emunah lemaisa? So my bracha to all of us is, there's a lot more here, and you can look at the piece. You can hang on to it if you want. You can look at it. Right, my bracha to all of us is, halavai, halavai. We should at least begin that process of the descent of emunah. Again, from being something of the mind. V'yadata yom v'ashevosa lavecha. And halavai, we should get a little taste of it in our hands. It's one thing to think about it, tell other people about it. It's another thing that when a person's going through a difficult situation, to really trust in a Kaddish Baruch Hu, that things are going to be okay. And if we can work on that, then Mirat Hashem will be zochet Amunah Shlema, and through that, the Gula Shlema, and Herab Yameinu. Thank you so much for your great learning. Really appreciate it.